Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. I'm one of your co-hosts, Cavett Ireland, joined by...
Sam Jane.
Brendan Wiesel.
Michael House.
So here we are, a podcast looking to dive deep beneath the Maryland sports programs, and we're going to take a look at what lives under the shell.
We were able to provide you guys with a little insight into the baseball program, which had a record season last year, winning the Big Ten. And in fact, we were able to introduce to the podcast, friend of the pod now, head athletic trainer of the baseball program, Tyler Cronin. Here you can take a listen to Tyler's story and some of the things that have been going on with the baseball program and his journey to being the athletic program. Take a listen.
So, Tyler, can you tell us a little bit about your path to arriving at UMD? What did it go? Where did you have to go through? Obviously, we talked about you going to Hope, but how did you get to where you are today, would you say?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people, you know, just kind of getting into athletic training is, you know, a lot of people will have a similar story where they were a student athlete in high school or something like that, and an athletic trainer took care of them. My story is completely different. I was actually watching a hockey game with my dad way back when I was really young, and somebody got checked pretty hard, was unconscious on the ice. And the athletic trainers came out and saved his life. And he went on to have a really great career in the NHL. And I just thought that was really cool. I was like maybe 12 years old. So that just something that kind of stuck with me. I took a course in high school that was kind of athletic training related, where we got to tape and learn about anatomy and things like that. And I just kind of fell in love with it. Hope was one of those schools that luckily you're in the program as a freshman. So you don't have to take any prerequisites like kines stuff to get into athletic training. You're just straight in the clinic day one. So I thought that was a really great opportunity to gain more experience, you know, and have fun, follow the teams and all this stuff. They had really good basketball teams, men's and women's. So it was cool kind of being around those teams, Division III. And then that experience brought me to University of Michigan, where I worked with football for 2 years. I actually worked Brady Hoke's last year and then Jim Harbaugh's first year. So that was cool to see those contrasting styles of coaching and cultures and all that kind of stuff. Is completely different experiences. Both had pros and cons, you know, but learning, you know, about that environment and things like that was really cool. And obviously Michigan has a lot of resources and things, great school. So it was a good experience. And then just kind of through my network, I learned about a position here at Maryland with baseball as a resident, where it's kind of an internship opportunity. And I got involved here. I interviewed and moved out here. So I enjoyed, you know, being here for a number of years. My residency ended after 2 years. So I moved down to Texas and worked there for a couple of years. And then Maryland called me back when this position was made full-time, and I applied, and I've been here ever since. So kind of a different path, but I love being here in College Park and living in this area, and it's been a great time so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like you you know, took your inspiration from that story from when you're like 12 years old and kind of use it to inspire yourself. So now kind of being on full time at Maryland, what's kind of your, in the off season like we are right now, what's kind of your day-to-day look like compared to during the season?
Yeah, so the schedule is a little bit different. Obviously, you know, we're not playing games or anything like that. So, for instance, today we had, today's going to be a little bit more of an off day for the guys. So we're just coming in, they're doing some treatment stuff. A lot of the pitchers threw yesterday in practice. So that's kind of where the day after that is kind of my time to shine with some recovery things and treatment things like that, to get them ready to go for Friday. We'll play a scrimmage game where all the hitters and all the pitchers will come together. We'll play a few innings, and then they have the weekends off. So they usually lift in the mornings very early, and then we'll hit kind of in the afternoon time, and I'll just kind of schedule my treatments and things around there. So in the fall, it's a lot more low key, Monday through Friday, morning lifts, and then afternoon practices. And then obviously in the spring, we're just rolling. So every day, you know, we either have a game or we have some sort of practice, and, you know, we're just trying to win games. So it's a little bit more intense, but here we just kind of build up that callus for the spring. So,
yeah. And so, you know, coming over from UGA, or you were at Michigan with the football program, which just kind of a quick question, was that more like like a lot of like I like dirty, not necessarily dirty work, or was that like you were training like legitimate like pro like player plans, like this is what we need you to do, or since you were kind of like just making your way up, was that more of a like what type of position was that?
Yeah, so I was a graduate assistant. So I was straight out of undergrad. After undergrad, you pass your certification exam, so you're a certified athletic trainer. You can practice, you know, everything is fine with that. So my GA position was more, you know, just kind of day to day helping the senior athletic trainers with things, but they would give me some cases of some guys where I could kind of, you know, learn some things and figure out some rehab plans for some of those players. So it was a good learning experience for sure.
So then now you come over to baseball, and baseball for athletic trainers, I've got to imagine, like I played baseball my whole life. It's a lot different than other sports in terms of like, you know, medical help. Like it's a, especially for pitchers, especially with modern medicine, J-bands, plyo balls, all that stuff. What is that like for you having to learn a whole new, like maybe you learned a little bit about it, but it's like a whole new sport, especially at a high D1 level. These guys are throwing 90 plus, so that each of them has to have specific arm care programs that, you know, you have to probably learn about. What went into that process, and how much research did you have to do to try to gauge the level of baseball recovery and things like that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. Football, I like to say football is more of like it's cut and dry. Like a dude tore his ACL, you know what's going on, and you're kind of constructing the rehab plans around that, things like that. Baseball is more of a puzzle, you know. A guy's shoulder is bothering him, but you got to figure out why. It could be because he's losing internal rotation on his front hip is why his shoulder is bothering him. So some of those things you have to put together the pieces of the puzzle a little bit better and figure out why his elbow is sore. Like what is happening during the course of that throw to make his elbow sore? A lot of times, you know, the arm is just a chain. So if the elbow is sore, it has nothing to do with the elbow. It could be coming from the thoracic spine or from the hips or even from the ankle, something like that. So learning about it was challenging, I won't lie to you. I played baseball, but not really at a high level. And I was never really injured. I wasn't really good enough to be injured. So learning all that kind of stuff, you know, diving into the research about baseball. Nowadays there's a ton of studies on, like you said, plyo balls, all those kind of things, J-bands, stuff like that. So just kind of diving into the research and figuring out what, you know, I truly believe in will make guys better. And then just applying that to the population that I have. So it was definitely trial by fire. But now we're kind of hitting our stride and figuring out what works for each of the guys.
Yeah, when kind of talking about what works for each of the guys, like how close are your relationships with some of the guys? You know, if you spend, obviously you haven't been at Maryland yet for 4 years, but I imagine you could get pretty close if you they spend all 4 years or maybe even more of their career working with you and working with the team.
Yeah, so I mean that's something that I truly believe you have to establish early. You know, they don't care how much you know, they just care. They want to know how much you care is really the bottom line. So developing those relationships early with the incoming dudes, having them, you know, kind of experience like little wins in the training room, like, hey, you learned how to do this today and now you feel better. So let's try and do something like that tomorrow. Maybe we'll add a couple more things. And then just having them be kind of in charge of their recovery. You know, there's a lot of guys on the team. I like to make some guys kind of in charge of their routine. So I build it with them and then we kind of work through it together. And that's a good way to build their trust. You know, they know that if they do this certain exercise, they feel better. So we can continue to kind of stack those wins. But yeah, that's a great question. I think the relationships are the biggest piece of this. You know, they won't trust you until they trust you, basically. So yeah.
Yeah. And so last year, you know, those guys obviously instilled a lot of trust in you, and they also were, you know, they won the Big Ten, made it to the NCAA tournament. What were some of the, you know, for you, what was like that watching? And then what was the craziest story that you have from that run for Maryland during the whole season that you can tell us about? Just like something you were just like, whoa, like if it was injury wise, if it was a player, like something funny happening, like, can you kind of take us inside that type of run that they had last year?
yeah, I mean there was a lot of little moments along the way. I mean we had some guys that were kind of banged up in the fall. Our fall was pretty tough last year. Some guys going into surgery in the fall. and not really knowing if they were going to be back in the spring. But they worked their tails off. They came in every day, came in twice a day. We set goals along the way to make them ready for the spring. And a lot of those guys, like Nigel Belgrave, Nick Robinson, some of the pitchers coming out of the pen, those were huge pieces to our success moving forward. A lot of the position players are just tough dudes. You know, they'd come in, they do their recovery stuff. Nothing really stood out from their perspective, but some of the pitchers were banged up. But they just kept fighting. And, you know, when you look back at the end of the season, you can kind of point to specific things that was like, hey, you know, if we don't have you, maybe we don't win this game. Maybe we don't stack these couple of wins. Maybe we're not looking at, you know, kind of where we're at. So just showing them that the process is the most important piece. But I think some of those arms taking care of their business in the fall was huge for our success in May, no doubt.
And what's one guy that you would say, like, we were kind of, me and Brendan were talking that, like, there's got to be some guys that are like, no, like, I can play. And you're just like, all right, like, we got to get you, like, completely taped up, wrist, like, because you're not ready if you're just going out there completely, no medical help. What's one guy on the team that you would say is just like, I'm going out there no matter what you say?
I'll be honest with you. I think all the position dudes are like that. I think every single one of them, 1 through 9, is like that. We'll go out there and just blue collar dudes just want to go and work. You know, toughness is one of the pillars of Maryland baseball, something that Coach Vaughn instills in the guys. It's one of their core foundations. So I think if I just want to point at specific dudes, then Luke Schlieger for sure, tough dude. Matt Shaw, really tough dude. Nick LaRusso. You know, basically all those dudes are just really tough, hard-nosed guys that just want to go out there and compete every day. And if you look back on, you know, who played throughout the whole season, none of those dudes really missed any games. So, you know, they took care of their business from a recovery standpoint, from a training standpoint, to make sure they were ready to go every game. And they definitely rung the bell and are a huge piece of the success we had last year.
Yeah, I remember Nick LaRusso coming in to pitch against – I was watching the UConn game, and I was like – I mean, this guy's coming into pitching like the biggest game of their season. Yep. He's a position player. Like, this kid's a dog. I mean, like, yeah, it's just like funny stuff like that. That, like, I think, like, as a trainer, that might be a little like, because I remember, like, you have a guy who's just going out there, and as a trainer, you're just like, I mean, what can I do? He's gonna play. There's nothing I can say or do. It's got to be a little frustrating, but also a little admirable, where you're just like, all right, man, like, whatever.
You know, at the end of the day, we all trust each other. You know, he trusts me that I'm going to get him ready to go if something happens, and I trust him that he put in the work to be able to be involved in that situation, even touch the mound. So you know, we never had a doubt that he would have success in that role, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, so you've talked a bit about kind of your relationship with the players and the product on the field. What is kind of your relationship with the coaches?
We have a great relationship. That's something that, you know, Coach Vaughn, I remember, you know, inviting me back to College Park and welcomed me back with open arms. And I was thankful for that. So all of them, you know, we trust each other a lot. We communicate very frequently on, you know, kind of what's going on with the guys. And they include all of us into the plans through the week. So all the guys will fill out surveys about their wellness every day, so we can kind of see where the trends are. We use something called Catapult, which tracks, you know, their workload every day, how much they're running around, how fast they're running, things like that. So we can kind of use those things in conjunction with Nathan Garza, who's our strength conditioning coach, to see kind of where they're at day to day. And, you know, we'll meet with the coaches and kind of modify practices or things to say, hey, maybe we need to back off on the infielders, because they were smoked yesterday with some of the things we were doing in practice. And they have, you know, we know that we have their support 100%. So our relationship is huge. We can bounce ideas off of each other. And, you know, there's never a question about anything. So that's been a huge piece of what we did last year for sure.
Yeah. How does, like, modern, you've talked about Catapult, like, how has that increased since you were at Michigan football, like GPS tracking and things like that? Like, how has that changed your role as a trainer? And what do you think that can do in the future? For guys that are in professions like you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think back, you know, when I was in school, it was just kind of something that, you know, only the Alabama footballs had, or, you know, maybe the Michigan football, like, it wasn't a thing that everybody had. And now we look at our department here at Maryland, and basically every team will have Catapult soon. So that's huge. I think as a whole, everyone is trying to move to be a little bit more objective with some things. Like, you know, we can take a guy that says he's feeling sore, and we can take that with a grain of salt and say, okay, why is he feeling sore? What was his workload yesterday? How do we need to modify some things based on some of those calculations? So I think technology is only going to get more and, you know, kind of more advanced. And I am definitely along for the ride. I think that only makes all of us better just to have more information kind of at our disposal, especially in baseball where it's all numbers and all stats and all data. You know, that's kind of all that people use. So I think that's going to be huge in 5 to 10 years for sure.
Yeah, you were kind of talking about like the soreness and you can measure it. Where is kind of the line from a trainer's perspective, like when to trust like your personal judgment without numbers versus trusting the technology? Is there kind of like a learning process that's been going on there for you?
Yeah, so I think, you know, going off of your clinical exam is huge. You know, like I said before, you can listen to a guy, like some of the tougher guys on the team will say, you know, hey, I'm not going to come out of the game. I'm feeling really good. Like my arm feels fine. But then kind of looking around, going through a clinical exam, well, where is his strength at? Where is his range of motion at? Oh, both of those numbers aren't very good. Hey, maybe we need to take a day off and kind of reassess. So I think the technology helps. And I think it will be a huge piece of it. But I personally don't rely on one thing all the time. You know, they're all just pieces of the puzzle that we can use to our advantage. But trusting your clinical exam and you know, kind of the objective history that you're able to gain from the student athlete is the number one thing that we need to be aware of for sure.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand when people get so frustrated with the idea of like analytics. Like it's all used as a tool to help like make a decision. It's not that you're just solely going off of it. And
yeah,
so I think that's sure. Like where I think some frustration comes from people is because like analytics just play it. It's a part of a puzzle, right? Like you said. So, I mean, yeah, I think that's something that people need to realize more. But kind of wrapping up here, if you had to give us, this might be hard, but if you had to give us one like recovery story or injury story that you saw or witnessed and then helped that athlete recover or just saw it happen and saw his like work back or hers work back, like what would that story be for you? In your time witnessing a bunch of different athletes, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a number of years ago, we had a guy named Brandon Gum, who was a first baseman here in Maryland. He came in with a really complex shoulder injury. Personally, just kind of looking at him, I didn't know if he was going to be able to play again. But he put in the work every day. He came in, we did rehab together. His strength got a lot better. And he was able to kind of throw, you know, in the infield and do some things. He ended up playing first base. But he was a huge piece of some of that success that we had in 2017, going to a regional and that season. And I just remember night game here, College Park. He hit the walk-off jack and it was an absolute laser beam off of the scoreboard. And it was a huge moment where, you know, we just kind of looked at each other. We're like, that's awesome, dude. Like, I'm really proud of you. And that was a cool moment that we had together. And, you know, it's just all a testament to kind of the work that he put in throughout the fall and kind of working into the spring. So that's one that definitely comes to mind.
Yeah, those are like the stories that we like love to like in our like future. Like we want to hear like those. That's so cool to be able to hear like a trainer and a guy who like worked his way back and then be able to appreciate the moment together. So that's definitely awesome. Sure. But this was Tyler Cronin, athletic trainer for the University of Maryland baseball team. Wrapping up this interview, thank you so much, Tyler, for coming on and giving us your time today.
So, you know, hearing Tyler's story in the moment, it was just really cool to be able to listen to a guy who, when he first talked about how he got into athletic training, I thought it was really interesting because at first, you know, he discussed how most trainers find their path, which is the one you would expect, right? Like some athlete, maybe they got injured, maybe they just weren't good enough, and they found an interest in how the body relates to sports and things and got into being a trainer. But his story was really cool. And when he talked about, you know, how he found watching a game with his dad and he saw a hockey player who was injured, and then the trainer come onto the ice and that hockey player later made it to the NHL. We never got the name, but still very encouraging and really cool story from Tyler, who you wouldn't expect many guys to start their career like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about on this podcast, looking at the stories you wouldn't have heard. I'm sure the NHL player has no idea he had that effect on Tyler's life, but down the road, it just shows up, and that's kind of the stuff we're looking into. Mike and Cav, you weren't at the recording, but what were your takeaways from the interview?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that I took away from that was just, like, the relationships within the team that they build. Like, when you think about a trainer, you don't immediately think of them as, like, a core part of the team with the coaches and players, but they really are. He talked about building relationships with the players and working through treatment plans with them daily, and then talking to the coaches every day, building relationships with them, talking about, you know, the players' workload and how they're feeling. And not to sidetrack a bit, but when my dad coached college basketball for 15 years up at Catholic U, it kind of reminded me of how the trainers were always just there on road trips with them, on the buses, at all the games. So, yeah, just the relationships within the teams. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. I thought one of the most interesting things that Tyler was talking about was when he was talking about the difference between being a trainer for the football team and for the baseball team. Like, you say, I remember from the interview, Tyler said it's pretty clean cut when the guy tears an ACL. There's a rehab process for that, and they have a considerable amount of research and knowledge, scientific knowledge, to back that up, and they know what they're doing. It's a very similar process every time. But with baseball, you say a pitcher has soreness in his right elbow or soreness in like his side. It's you got to go through all the motions and the actual kinesiology of what is irritating the pitcher and what's going on with the player and how to rehab that. It's case to case. Totally. It's different every time.
Yeah, I thought that was super interesting when you talked about modern technology with baseball. You know, I played baseball in high school and throughout my life, and a lot goes into, especially with arm care. Like, there's a ton of modern medicine that goes into it, and at the college level, they have even more. Me and Brendan were both really surprised when he talked about GPS monitoring of athletes. I think it's super interesting how at first, when he talked about when he was back at Michigan, they used to have that, but it was really only like the Alabama football, the Michigan football, the blue bloods that you think of. Now he says nearly every sport at Maryland will be having that type of GPS tracking, and that's huge for not only the athletes but the trainers as well, because they can create a more knowledgeable and like better plans for each player that's individualized. And not only that, but analytics, a lot of people talk about how analytics can be a negative in a lot of sports. I think that's like kind of the analytics that I envision. Is it's not, Tyler talked about how he doesn't just make the decision based off the GPS tracking, but he uses that and he uses this informed medical opinion to make a decision about what this guy can do today. And I think that's what analytics does. It's a piece of the puzzle. And so I thought that was super cool how he talked about how GPS tracking plays a role in his decisions, but it's not the only factor that goes into what a guy does on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, also huge for preventing those injuries from occurring in the first place.
Yeah definitely
talking about kind of the season we're in now, talking about the fall plans and making sure they talked about getting their bodies ready for the rest of the season, kind of getting them prepared. All right, now that we've wrapped up our thoughts about the interview about Tyler, let's dive into some sports, dive into some games we have for this coming weekend. I know, Sam, you were at the football game last weekend in Michigan. Not playing Michigan, playing Michigan State. What are you thinking for this weekend?
Yeah, just kind of to briefly talk about last week, the Terps, they were able to play a pretty solid game. I'm not able to come out on top, but show that they can compete with a top 10 program in the country. It was all in all a pretty impressive performance from Mike Loxley's crew. But kind of talking about this week, Michigan State, you want to talk about a tale of two different Michigan teams. Michigan State entered the season highly ranked, but suffered a loss on the road to Washington as Michael Penix Jr., the transfer from Indiana, shredded them. Really just was able to manipulate the secondary, and Michigan State got blown out in Washington. And one would think maybe, that's just a road game. That's a tough way to tough place to play in Washington. But then you come home to Minnesota. Minnesota's a good team, one of the top three teams in the West, and they just got ran off the field by Minnesota. Peyton Thorne, the returning quarterback, had a rough day at the office, but really it's just been the secondary. Tanner Morgan, six-year senior quarterback for the Gophers, was able to just absolutely abuse the Michigan State secondary yet again. And then when he wasn't doing that, it was Mo Ibrahim, the running back from Minnesota, really just taking advantage on the ground. And just that defense, they had a tough time stopping Minnesota's offense. It might be the same situation for them against Maryland.
I just hope they're not wearing those god-awful State jerseys that they have.
Yeah, I will say Michigan State's jerseys are usually pretty solid, but those neon ones I'm not a fan of. Yeah, I think like just being able to run the ball is going to be huge for the Maryland offense, and being able to stop the run is another big thing. Michigan State, for the lack of talent on defense, they do have some pieces on offense. Jalen Broussard, transfer from Colorado, is a good running back. And then a guy to watch out for Terps fans is Keon Coleman. He's actually a two-sport athlete, which is super interesting, in basketball and football. So he manages to play both of them, and he's been Peyton Thorne's top weapon without Jaden Reed, who is their number one go-to guy, but he's been hurt a little bit. Came back from the Minnesota game, I believe, but Keon Coleman's really kind of stepped up into that wide receiver two role, which is impressive considering he also starts on the hardwood. But I want to touch a little bit about Big Mike and Brendan, and you can kind of get in there. I think that running the ball is important, but you cannot strive away from what you're good at, and Maryland's passing attack is what they're good at. So how do you balance – what do you guys think about balancing, making sure you know you're not turning the ball over because of you know the rain, but also – Your biggest strength attacks Michigan State's biggest weakness if you're Maryland?
I think you kind of just summed it up right there perfectly. Maryland's going to have to throw the ball to win this game. We know they've had a very strong ground attack coming in. They really had a strong ground attack against some of the weaker opponents. But they're going to have to play some of those play actions that work so well. And if they can do that and they can set up the pass from the run, then they're going to be successful. I mean, you look at the weather. It's going to be 60 degrees. It's going to be pouring rain. You know, Mike Locksley, favorite thing to say is to pack the shell.
I will enjoy that one from the
press box. I don't
think
the shell is going to be too packed, frankly.
I feel like for the Terps on Saturday, I feel like they shouldn't be targeting deep passes like they have before with Rakeem Jarrett, especially if Jarrett's not playing. But if they can attack the intermediate and short throws, try to get Dante Demas involved more than he has the last few games, you know, Jacob Coleman, Deshaun Jones, I feel like they should be good then, because when you pound the ball, it opens up the passing game. So if you just attack those parts of the field, it doesn't have to be deep passes, but if you open up the passing game like that.
No, definitely. I think another system is the RPO, and making sure that you know you're able to hit guys across the middle. And that's been, I think, one of Talia's biggest improvements is his accuracy over the middle has really improved. And so that's something I would look for Maryland to try to exploit Michigan State secondary. And on the defensive side, just briefly, Michigan State, good passing attack, relatively good running attack. It hasn't really been their offense's struggles that have led to the losses, but Peyton Thorne has taken a step back, and without Kenneth Walker, who went to the Seahawks in the draft, Mike, we know you're a fan,
mm-hmm.
Seattle Seahawks.
Rough season so far. Yeah, let's not talk about it. I know they're facing your Lions this week, too.
Baby. Yes, sir.
I will not be putting money on that with you.
But kind of without Walker, it seems as if the running game has taken a hit. It seems like Peyton Thorne is starting to lose confidence. I think Maryland's the biggest key will be able to get pass rush early on Thorne, because if you're able to do that, force a few turnovers with the rain, it really could swing the direction in Maryland's way. But I think a thing that could make this game closer than what it may seem is Michigan State is a desperate team. You know, they've lost two in a row now. They're on the road. Everybody kind of thinks they're destined for a 6-win season, and that would be a brutal look, especially when you pay your new head coach Mel Tucker $95 million. And so I think that they're going to come into this one with a desperation mentality. And so kind of touching on that, do we want to go around and give score predictions?
Yeah, let's give a little score predictions. We talked about the rain. It's going to be 60 degrees. It's not going to be a fun time out there. With that being said, I think it's going to be a very close game. Michigan State, like I said, very hungry team. Maryland wants to get set on the right foot for the next Big Ten games. I'm going to say final score prediction, 24-20, Maryland wins.
I'm going to say Maryland 27-17. I think it's going to be a run-heavy game. And I also got to say the over-under is 60. I'm going to have to take the under on that because of the weather. Viva Las Vegas, baby.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a look at Michigan State, they go from 3-point underdogs at home, get blown out by Minnesota, now 7-point dogs. I'm taking Maryland 34-17.
Yeah, I think Cavett's on the right track. I think Michigan State, even though they are a desperate team, they just look lost on both sides of the ball. The only element is the rain that, like, we don't know, we can't predict. And so when you're looking at that side of it, I would say it's going to be a lower scoring game. But I would kind of go in between. I would say 31-10 Maryland. So they cover. I think Michigan State is frankly not a very good football team, but we'll see. And it should be an entertaining one. Maryland, this is a big game for them if they want to keep the momentum for the Michigan game.
Yeah, gonna be a big test for Maryland coming off that loss to Michigan. So
yeah,
see what they can do this weekend.
Absolutely. Moving into some other sports happening this weekend, happening on Friday, we're lucky enough to be joined by field hockey beat writer of Terrapin Sports Central, Mike. What do you got for us for this
weekend?
What's
up, guys? All right, a little bit of field hockey now. All right, so they got a big Big Ten weekend coming up. So Friday, they're going to be facing number 3, Iowa. They're 8-1 on the season. And then Sunday, they're going to be facing number 2, Northwestern. They're 9-1. Iowa is actually the only team that has beaten Northwestern so far this season. So Iowa, very good defensive team. They've allowed the least amount of goals in the Big Ten so far, only 0.78 goals allowed so far this season. Offense, got to get going for the Terps this weekend. Offensively, Maryland's number 1 in goals scored per game. They're averaging 4.1 goals per game. So if they can get that offense going against Iowa, I think they'll be great. And then against Northwestern, I think it's about limiting Northwestern's points. Northwestern, they're 3rd in points per game with 3.4 goals a game. And again, they're also a very good defensive team, allowing the 2nd least goals in the Big Ten, only 1 per game. So again, with Northwestern, getting that offense going.
Yeah, good stuff there, Mike. Looking for that field hockey dynasty to begin its reign.
Mike, just quickly, if Maryland wins both these games on the road against Iowa and Northwestern, do you think they get the number 1 ranking in the country?
So right now, North Carolina is. Northwestern was number 1 last week, but the one they lost against Iowa, they dropped the spot. But I don't know, because that loss against Princeton dropped them one spot this week, so we'd have to see. I'd say give it another week, another win against a Big Ten opponent. By the way, talking about Big Ten opponents, there are 9 teams in the Big Ten for field hockey. 7 of those 9 teams are ranked right now.
Powerhouse
Northwestern,
Conference.
Iowa, Maryland, Penn State, Michigan, Rutgers, Ohio State. It's a gauntlet in the Big Ten field hockey.
Yeah, it seems as if Maryland's going to have a rough road. A team, however, that has started to find their way and get some momentum is the women's soccer team. And Kevin, you want to talk a little bit about those, them on the pitch?
Actually, let's not jump the gun to the weekend yet. Right now, we have the Maryland women's soccer team playing Wisconsin right now. Terps are currently up 1-0 with 22:47 in the first half with a goal from Alina Stahl early on. So,
thanks for that mid-game update, Kevin.
Yeah, Coach Megan Ryan-Nemser looking to get the girls hot.
If you're listening to the pod live, congrats. score.
I'm not sure how you're doing that, so kudos to you.
We're gonna take a look. Hey, keep watch for a headline this weekend on the women's.
I'm gonna predict final score of that game 2-0.
This would be a very big win for the girls, the female Terps, because Wisconsin, right now, sitting at ranked 23rd in the country. They are 8-1-2. I'm sorry, 3-0 in conference play. They've taken care of all the Big Ten opponents they faced. Indiana, Purdue, kind of sitting at the bottom. Maryland, middle of the pack. So this will be a big test for the Terps, and if they can pull this one off, it'll be huge.
You feel Coach has done a good job in her first year of the Terps?
I do. I think Coach Nemser got it was a shaky start. It was a couple draws, and then they got a win under their belts, and then tough loss, and now they're looking to get back on track. So it could be. It's been up and down so far, but I think they're on the steady incline.
Yeah, and I think another ideal with head coach Megan Ryan-Nemser is that it's really this first year is almost about building culture. You know, and you take over a program as a brand new head coach with really no connections to the Maryland program. It's really just about making sure you build that culture, start to set a standard for the program, get it back on track to where it needs to be. And it seems as if all the players are buying in when you watch the games. And when I talked with a couple of them, Alina Stahl, after one of the games, it seems as if they're starting to buy into the idea of the type of program that Nemser wants to build.
Yeah, absolutely. Now looking at the flip side, a men's program, much more established program. Cabot, game on Friday against Old Dominion. What do you think?
Yeah, it's Maryland's been hot. They enter Friday night's game on a 5-match unbeaten run, which includes wins over Virginia and Georgetown, dominating the DMV, Michigan, and they beat number 13 Ohio State, which was a big win last week for the Terps. And right now they're sitting at the top of the Big Ten standings. They have 7 points. And,
sitting eighth in the country as well.
Eighth in the country as well, yes. 3 conference matches. They've earned 7 points from those. Also, Nick Richardson, named Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week, scored a goal against Penn State and helped them keep that clean sheet against Ohio State. I think the Terps are going to, I don't want to say deal with Old Dominion, because, you know, any given day a team can, it's just what happens. It's the nature of the beast.
Can I ask a quick question about that? Like, how in soccer, how impactful does necessarily like a hot goalie, or like how likely is it that like a high level team can just dominate a low level team? Or just things, are there certain aspects of soccer that will like even out, you know, like necessarily maybe a talent gap or things like that? Like, are there variables that can bring a game closer than when it necessarily should be on paper?
Well, that's the thing. It's like any given day. So if a team's hot, if they're in form, like the Terps currently are, they could take this one 5-0. But if Old Dominion has a good day, the guys get ready and they get rallied up, then they could definitely bring it to the Terps.
Yeah.
And we've seen the Terps play down to other teams' levels already this season. But if Coach Sasho gets their heads right, I think Hunter George and the boys will take care of business.
Yeah, I mean, Old Dominion should definitely be a win. They've been a little bit on edge this season. Maryland, like you said, Liberty didn't have the greatest game against them, but I think Maryland will come away with the win at Old Dominion.
Yeah. It's in College Park.
It's in College Park, yeah.
Yeah, you said at Old Dominion.
Sorry, against Old Dominion.
At Ludwig Field this Friday night. Also, it's Ludwig out, so the first 300 fans in attendance will receive neon wigs, courtesy of the UMD crew.
I'd like to say that none of us need that, because our hair, I mean, some of the flow on this podcast.
That's true.
This is not a visual podcast. You're really looking at something special between these just four guys.
Let's paint a picture. Okay.
I didn't know there were visual
podcasts. Cavett won best hair for his high school, right? Isn't that true, Cavett?
Runner-up.
Snub.
Another Maryland team facing Michigan State this weekend is the women's volleyball team facing Michigan State Friday night, 6:30 p.m. in the Xfinity Center Pavilion. Both teams have yet to win a game in Big Ten play, so one of the teams there looking to get their first win. And then Sunday, 1 p.m., Maryland faces number 3, Nebraska. Sold-out game in Xfinity. It's going to be a tough, but if Maryland can get the win, the Xfinity Center will be rocking.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska's a historically great program.
Powerhouse.
Yeah, they're the pinnacle of the Big Ten, so that would be a huge upset for Maryland women's volleyball. And then kind of, you know, Brendan and Kevin want to take us into our weekly segment we're going to have here.
All right, so we got Terrific Turtle, Irene Knox. This one goes back to some of the first days at my time at College Park. You know, Cavett and I, Cavett's my roommate for those listening who don't know, doing a little Googling, trying to figure out a little bit of information about the University of Maryland athletics, and we came across a very special one, so let me take you down this road. Irene Knox was the first individual national championship.
First of all, what a name, Irene Knox.
She deserves Turf of the Week, in my opinion. She was the first individual national champion for the University of Maryland. Get this, Knox was a part of the 1932 rifling squad, where she won an individual championship, and she led the team to a national championship. Cabot, tell us about some of those stats.
Yeah, so Irene Knox, after having one heck of a year, she had herself a day in the championship. Hitting 559 out of 600 points and hitting the bullseye 119 out of 120 times.
I mean, I'd like to say that is impressive, but there's a reason they called me Sammy Marksman back in the day. I mean, I was an absolute stud on the range. Whoever was archery, rifling, I mean, even on the basketball court, to be frank. I mean, they call me a shooter for a reason. And I, you know, Knox, Miss Irene, she got a good shot, but I would like to say that I think I could have competed.
Yeah, shoot or shoot. I think Big Mike over here, he would fit in well with the Stormtroopers.
I think Mrs. Knox has you beat, Sam. I couldn't lie.
Yeah, she might, you know. But if I had the technology there is today, I could just put the old scope on that and go crazy for sure. But tell us a little bit more about Irene.
Yeah, so this golden year was part of her reign of almost domination. She came close in 1931, coming in second, and then in 1933 took the bronze medal. But additionally, the women's rifle team won the national championship in 1926, a few years earlier than Irene Knox's time, but the school didn't recognize this until a year later. But needless to say,
the 1927 lacrosse national champion, the first official Maryland national champion, but Turp of the Week, Irene Knox.
Really, needless to say, 1926. The women's rifling squad, the dynasty will return.
Yeah, I mean, that's a super interesting, you know, story, and kind of goes into, you know, how Miss Irene, like, kind of a trailblazer almost for Maryland in terms of women's sports, and also, you know, really being the first national champion this week. Really cool guests, really cool stories all around. And so, yeah, it's been a really cool week, and Cap's going to take us home.
Yeah. Firstly, credit to Dave Ungrady for Tales from the Maryland Terrapins for that Irene Knox story. And that's about all our time for you this week.
Tyler Cronin, too. Special thanks to him.
Yeah, yeah. Friend of the pod.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to episode 1 of Under the Shell.
Brought to you by Terrapin Sports Central.